puppies were all over Duane's dorm. Just his luck, then, that for this one semester, a certain renowned Dr. Torrance Hamilton was teaching the course. It was as if Eric Clapton had agreed to play the junior prom the way they fawned over Hamilton. Duane shifted disconsolately. His butt had already fallen asleep in the cold plastic seat. He glanced to his left, to his right. All around, students, upperclassmen mostly, were typing notes, running microcassette recorders, hanging on the professor's every word. It was the first time ever the course had been filled to capacity. Not an engineering student in sight. What a crock. Duane reminded himself he still had a week to drop the course. But he needed this credit, and it was still possible Professor Hamilton was an easy grader. Hell, all these students wouldn't have shown up on a Saturday morning if they thought they were going to get reamed out. Would they? In the meantime, front and center, Duane figured he'd better make an effort to look awake. Hamilton walked back and forth on the podium, his deep voice ringing. He was like a gray lion, his hair swept back in a mane, dressed in a snazzy charcoal suit instead of the usual threadbare set of tweeds. He had an unusual accent, not local to New Orleans, certainly not Yankee. Didn't exactly sound English either. A teaching assistant sat in a chair behind the professor, assiduously taking notes. "And so," Dr. Hamilton was saying, "today we're looking at Eliot's The Wasteland, the poem that packaged the 20th century in all its alienation and emptiness. One of the greatest poems ever written. The Wasteland." Duane remembered now. What a title. He hadn't bothered to read it, of course. Why should he? It was a poem, not a damn novel. He could read it right now, in class. He picked up the book of T.S. Eliot's poems. He'd borrowed it from a friend, no use wasting good money on something he'd never look at again, and opened it. There, next to the title page, was a photo of the man himself. A real weenie. Tiny little granny glasses, lips pursed like he had 2 feet of broomstick shoved up his ass. Duane snorted and began turning pages. Wasteland, wasteland. Here it was. Oh, shit. This was no limerick. The son of a bitch went on for page after page. "The first lines are by now so well known that it's hard for us to imagine the sensation, the shock, that people felt upon first reading it in The Dial in 1922. This was not what people considered poetry. It was rather a kind of anti-poem. The persona of the poet was obliterated. To whom belong these grim and disturbing thoughts? There is, of course, the famously bitter allusion to Chaucer in the opening line, but there is much more going on here. Reflect on the opening images. Lilacs out of the dead land, dull roots, forgetful snow. No other poet in the history of the world, my friends, ever wrote about spring in quite this way before." Duane flipped to the end of the poem, found it contained over 400 lines. Oh, no. No. It's intriguing that Eliot chose lilacs in the second line rather than poppies, which would have been a more traditional choice at the time. Poppies were then growing in an abundance Europe hadn't seen for centuries, due to the numberless putrefying corpses from the Great War. But more important, the poppy, with its connotations of narcotic sleep, seems the better fit to Eliot's imagery. So why did Eliot choose lilacs? Let's take a look at Eliot's use of allusion, here most likely involving Whitman's "When Lilacs Last in the Dooryard Bloomed." Oh my God, it was like a nightmare. Here he was in the front of the class and not understanding a word the professor